Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to For Your Benefit. This is a packed show in a packed studio. Co-hosts of the show, myself, Bob Lyons, and Tammy Flanagan, are joined by Federal News Radio Senior Correspondent Mike Causey.
Senior Correspondent means put defibrillator near this door. That's what that title means.
Okay.
And we're glad also, to be with you.
Well, good. And we're also joined by two retired federal ladies, Betty Koger and Linda Force. And they're here courtesy of their kind, if you will, contributions to NARF and toured the studio, saw the glass enclosed nerve center, and we're going to also pick their brains. So.
Yeah, they were the winners of the silent auction. We had an Alzheimer's fundraiser. It's one of our main fundraisers for our chapter of NARF. So Linda made the winning bid and invited Betty to come, and Betty's sister Teresa's here, but she's not going to be on the radio today. She's our supervisor today.
Okay, great. Now, why don't we start off with this, and you all brought this up right when I came late to the studio. What memorable events, situations, and things like that kept your juices flowing while a federal employee?
Well, maybe start off with, like, where was your career? Like, what agencies did you work for?
I spent 30 years working for the Army. I spent 30 years working for the Department of the Army in various locations. Long time in the Pentagon and then in Alexandria at Human Resources Command.
You know what I've noticed about people, particularly in defense, I think especially defense, now probably Homeland Security as well, is they really do have a sense of mission. It's like we're supporting the troops. Mm-hmm. And again, particularly in time of war, which lately has been all the time, but they do seem to have a mission that's maybe you don't find at some of the softer agencies.
Oh, I know that too from teaching seminars. I was doing a seminar somewhere out in the Midwest, and we were on an Air Force base in the flight. You know, we were in the flight path of the jets, and I was getting frustrated because I couldn't hear myself talk, let alone have them hear me. And one lady piped up from the back of the room. She goes, "Honey, that's the sound of freedom." I was like, "Oh yeah, that's right." So I shouldn't be complaining. So yeah, they do have a mission. That's to support the troops, absolutely.
Yeah. I last 15 years or so, I worked in database administration, which had control or responsibility for the Army's personnel databases for the active, enlisted, and officers' mobilization as well.
So you were telling us before the show, not only did you do that, but you met some interesting people along the way.
I did. When I worked in the Pentagon, I worked for the Deputy Chief of Operations, which covered events worldwide. So there was a cadet cheating scandal, and I met Mr. Gorman, and that was a very interesting event then. Because there was a lot going on in our office with new equipment that didn't work right, and we still had to produce. So
I found fascinating about Betty's story. She said that, you know, even as a clerk in the, I mean, she was a supervisor of the typing pool, right?
Yes.
At that early days. And she was in on classified information. It was coming in from all over the world because it had to pass on to the steno pool and the typing pool to get that word out. So the first one to hear that information is right there in a typing pool.
My mother came to D.C. During the war to work in the still under construction Pentagon, and she was a GS-2 typist in G-2 in Army Intelligence, and learned a lot of stuff and had some over the years she advanced in government. But I met some really interesting people who worked for her who were involved in all kinds of security and operations, and it was an interesting education for a young kid.
Just having all those different especially in the Pentagon, having all the different officers assigned to different departments, like even budget's interesting when you get right down to it because that's what supports them. But there was intelligence and there was we did a lot of work on the Panama Canal Treaty, came through the office, even things in with dealing with the Iran hostages back in the 80s.
Yes, wow. It made life interesting at the Pentagon.
It was very interesting. You know, long nights, long days.
Yeah, but what you say, Mike actually said this a fair number of years ago, that the federal government, being that it does everything, if you don't like your job here, you can go within the government and do the same thing that you could have done in private industry.
Yeah, you can advance your career, too. You start out in the typing pool, but you don't necessarily end up there.
Yeah. Well, and you were at Interior, the Bureau of Land Management.
That's correct. And that agency is so diverse. There's 6 to 8 different bureaus under the purview of Department of the Interior. Although I didn't start my career with Interior, I started by a chance encounter with somebody who asked me if I'd like to join the federal government. This was at a picnic after I'd been working on the outside for 20 years. I said, sure, why not? Anyway, I ended up working for the Navy in San Bruno, California at an engineering field division. And my job was to be a project manager for different MILCON construction projects that were being built by the Navy throughout California. Hmm. And one of my projects had to do with the Top Gun school down in Miramar.
Wow.
You probably saw the movie Top Gun.
I was going to say, did you get Tom Cruise's autograph?
Let me tell you, the movie was an excellent replication of what I saw down there.
Wow.
I had gone down there to meet with my public works liaison guy, but that morning I had to go to a nuclear welding school to inspect it. Well, if you've ever been in a nuclear welding school, it's full of dust and filth. So I knew that. So I was prepared. I wore a kind of a mod-looking jumpsuit because I figured I'm going to be crawling around and I'm not going to be wearing, you know, my high-heel shoes.
Oh, and your sassy little window was in there with the Top Gun pilots.
At noontime, I met the guy and we go over to the Top Gun school to meet the commander there. And he was very gracious, took us on a tour of the school. My project was an addition to the school to be the simulator for the F-14D aircraft. So we went in on a tour. You could see everything. I thought, this is fantastic. This is where our tax dollar is going. Mm-hmm. They even had a hydraulic simulator that was on like something, creature from another planet. You know, the thing was rotating. The pilots are inside. After we met and everything and we were about to leave, my friend Steve from Public Works and I are standing there saying goodbye to the commander. And he said to me, well, Ms. Force, I suggest that the next time you come down here for our meeting, that you wear something more appropriate. You look like some kind of wild woman.
Look like you belonged on Laugh-In with Goldie Hawn.
We got in the car and we're laughing our heads off, you know, like what planet is this guy from? Well, anyway, it turned out it was very, very, he called me the next day and this was quite surprising because usually they don't call and apologize. He said, well, I hope I didn't hurt your feelings or by anything. I said, yes, you really ticked me off. And then we became kind of chummy. He got his revenge on me, though, when I went down all dressed up in a dress and high heel shoes for the big powwow down there. And he insisted, he made such a scene that I climb up in a simulator, hanging off the ceiling. I mean, high heel shoes, climbing up a ladder. And you can barely fit yourself in the cockpit. And then he's hanging off the side, and he's telling me, okay, now push this button, push that button. I said, where are we going? He said, we're going to North Island. And then I said, well, how come the screen went black? He said, you just crashed the plane. So that was my experience with the Top Gun school. But with the Interior Department, the thing that was so neat about that, and I still think back and smile every time I do think about it, I, as the senior engineer for the Bureau of Land Management, I was on a committee, a council, sponsored by Office of Public Safety from the Interior Department. So all the different bureaus had a representative, and we would go to different places throughout the country for meetings, and then go on tours to see what kind of construction and maintenance was being conducted at these different facilities that we visited. Hmm. Well, one particular, we'd meet every 3 months. Well, one time it was Bureau of Land Management's turn to host it. So my job was to arrange for the hotel, arrange for the tours that we were going to go on, and then the rest of it was handled by the gentleman who was in charge of the Department of Public Safety.
So you were somewhat of a forerunner in the sense that PMs usually aren't females in the construction industry. And here you are.
Well, PM,
by the way, is a project manager.
Yeah. Well, the thing that was so, I set it up so that after we stopped at the visitor center, this is right out in Las Vegas, the visitor center was about a 15-minute drive, and they have all sorts of literature and information about the Wild Horse and Burro program that the Bureau is famous for. I took them down to the BLM's Desert Tortoise Research Facility, which is about a 10-minute drive.
You did say tortoise.
Tortoise.
Okay.
Desert tortoise. And we walk in the door, and this young man opened the door. He said, I'm Dr. So-and-so from University of Chicago, and this is what we do here. We test the tortoises for fertility, lifespan, and all sorts of things along that line. And he said, you came just at the right moment.
We're mating.
And we said, oh, well, that's good. He said, follow me. We're going into the maternity ward. And everybody is, you know, what? What's this? Yeah. We go into this room, and on the floor are four cardboard boxes full of dirt. And in each one was a huge lady desert tortoise. He said, see Victoria over here? She's just about ready to lay her eggs, because we ultrasounded her this morning. Yeah. And she's got six eggs. And sure enough, right on cue, she starts laying her little eggs right there in front of us.
Just for you. Wow, that's really cool.
I mean, and the eggs were a little smaller than a chicken egg. But then what he did was he marked each one when it was born or when it came out, when how much it weighed. It took all the vital statistics about the eggs, put them in a little egg carton, put them in the incubator, and they'd stay there for 2 months. So I will never forget that, because it was just the cutest thing. And these tortoises are, they have about 600 to 1,000 desert tortoises at any one time that they're testing.
Wow.
And doing more research on to understand what happens when there's no water, what happens when there's no food, that kind of thing.
So the moral of the story is government work is anything but boring.
Yes. Yeah. It you can make it as interesting as you want in your whatever your, you know, wherever you are. And that's the thing that I found so fascinating about it. No matter how boring the job was,
there was something
I could always find something very interesting to take home with me and think about and contribute.
You know, one time when I was doing general assignment for the post, I interviewed two Navy scientists, civilians, and they were talking about going to Mars even back then. And one of the ways you're going to do it, it's a long trip, and that means lots of supplies. So they were talking about putting people in hibernation or partial hibernation. And they said one way to study this was the bears that do that. It's not polar bears, but certain kinds of bears that hibernate. And these guys, their job was to take the temperature of hibernating bears. Well, it was only one way to do it. And that was an interesting job for a couple of GS-12s, you know. But the government's got it.
Any job you can think of, you can do in the government. Yeah, this would be a recruiting show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, if after retiring from the feds, then if you wanted to go to work, it'd be pretty hard for you to find a job as interesting as the jobs that you had prior to retirement.
Well, the thing about that is, in my particular case, I had a plan. My plan was that while I was still working and could afford it, I went back and got my doctorate degree on my own nickel. I mean, the government didn't pay for this. I had to save up my money and then go take courses until I got my degree. And my plan was to go into teaching at the university level, which I did. So it's good to have a plan so that you don't just retire and then sit home watching Oprah. TV all day long.
Well, and the operative word there was while you had the money, too. Yeah. You were earning a salary. Yes. Very important. Yeah.
So you started that plan still while in the years of your career. That was really thinking forward, and you don't see a lot of that going on. I think that's really good advice. That's a good tip.
Mm-hmm. All right. You just led into maybe another one of the questions and said, what suggestions, thoughts, and advice could y'all, both of you, offer to those contemplating retirement? Because our audience spans, probably it's a little slanted towards near-term retirement, but we do have some mid-career folks that listen. But what can you offer any advice or to tell them what made your retirement successful, your glide path to retirement?
Well, there's, you know, we are members of NARFE, which is basically a volunteer organization. We all have, volunteering is a great way to make connections, meet people, and have a little fun while you're doing it. Mm-hmm.
NARFE stands for the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. Linda's our vice president. And Betty, I know you're an important position, but I don't know the name of the position.
I'm just the hospitality chair.
That's the most important position. That's what makes our meetings fun.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And as hospitality chair, you find neat places to eat?
No, I don't do that. That's a problem where down where we live, finding a really excellent place to eat.
We meet at the Holiday Inn. They have a pretty good meal there.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. But,
although I saw your photos, Tammy sent me the photos from the meeting, the fashion show, and then I guess the auction and the people that got the different, won the different
things.
Yeah,
we do a lot of fun events because we have the fashion show, we have the 4th of July parade, they're going to they just went. Friday night was baseball game.
We designed our own float and we all hopped on and had a ball throwing candy to the children.
Yeah. I've been a member of NARF since 1988, since I still work for the government, but I never could go to the meetings because they're always held in the afternoon. So finally, now my schedule has slowed down enough that I try to get there, three or four or five times a year?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm there pretty often now.
Well, I've never worked for the government, but I'm a NARF
You've been a
member,
lot of meetings.
Have been for a long time.
Yeah.
And my chapter is literally down the street at the D.C. Public Library. But I, for no other reason, I mean, I do it. It's a great outfit, but I do it to get the magazine and have the access to the legislative stuff they do. And, of course, I talk to them as a reporter on a regular basis. But
that's been useful to me, too.
You brought the current issue, which is about second careers. The last issue, last month's issue, has a breakdown of pending legislation, and it's as good as anything I've ever seen. It's what the bill's is called, what it does, where it is, who's the sponsor. I mean, it's boom, like just like that. Yeah. And some fascinating information. So
I think which congressman's supporting the efforts of federal employees, and you know which ones are supporting other efforts.
Right,
that
and
might
this
be
one surprised me because the worst pending bill in the book from the sake of federal workers and retirees was sponsored by a Democrat in the Senate, not the Republicans who get all the blame, but it good to know.
Very good to know. Yeah, NARF testifies before Congress on a regular basis, and that's one of the things, that's one of their main purposes in being, is to protect and preserve the rights of federal employees and retirees, not just the retirees, though.
Are they a 501c3?
I believe.
This is a tax person.
I believe they are.
Okay. But what I like about the magazine, for years it was good, but they really jazzed it up with colors, and the articles are not all pre-retirement.
Yeah, NARF is going through a genesis of trying to reinvent themselves.
I look forward to reading, and of course there's this guy that writes on finance, but there's another, and I can never remember his name, Tom, is it?
Oh, the guy that writes a lot of the benefits articles?
Yeah, he's really good. And you're oftentimes quoted in it, of course. So that makes
well,
it
I've
even
written
better.
Two articles. Yeah, I had two cover stories, which I thought was kind of cool. Yeah, David Tobenkin.
Yeah.
He's the author of a lot of the benefits articles. And it's really gone through a big reinvention of the magazine. And even the whole organization is trying some new things, trying to generate interest. Because like in many of these organizations that lobby Congress and that represent groups of federal employees, they're losing members. And we're no exception. NARF has been losing members by the drove. So we're looking for ways to increase membership and make it an organization that really does represent the needs and the wants of federal employees.
Well, the interesting thing, too, about this kind of a niche publication in that it's aimed at federal workers and retirees, but be that as it may, if every NARF member gets a copy, which I do, you all do, yeah. That makes it one of the largest circulation magazines in the United States.
That's true.
It's a huge number of people. And I know you'll read some of these, AARP and the other end of the spectrum, but some of these things that you don't really think of as mass media are, in fact, bigger than the mass media.
Yeah, I think for retirees, one of the best things about the magazine, too, is during the health benefits open season, it tells you what's happening when you turn 65, what do you do about Medicare. Mm-hmm. So it's a very useful publication in addition to just being informative.
All right, we've got some other questions. How about this one? What happened since you retired that you were surprised or it happened unexpectedly?
That you can tell us.
Next question. Next question. Next question.
Linda's got something.
No, I mean, you plan, but what popped up that was unexpected from the planning perspective, not...
Well, I decided to further my resume, and what I'm doing is studying to take an exam to be a certified project manager professional, PMP.
So okay. You're not finished
sponsored by the
career.
Project Management Institute. Now, even though I've done, they had a lot of requirements. You can only go back 8 years. And since the door was about ready to slam in my face, I was able to get enough of the hours that they required to qualify to take the exam. They required something like 4,500 hours of work within the last 8 years that you were working in project management. And so many hours, like 35 hours of education. Well, fortunately, I had something like close to 400 hours of education and about 6,500 work hours. So I got qualified to take the exam, which I'm going to do this year.
Wow.
That's my goal.
Good, yeah. What are you going to do with that?
Having a goal helps me personally. That has something that I can look forward to, something I can work towards.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And learn as I'm doing it.
You sound very focused and inner-directed, so I probably should ask this question to myself, but I'm going to ask it to you all. If you could turn back the clock, what would you do differently prior to retirement, maybe mid-career?
I would...
Would you have started working for the government earlier? Or are you happy? Because both of you came in around your 30s, right?
Oh, I was actually 41.
Oh, you were 41. Okay.
I was 30.
And at the time, I was chairman of the American Welding Society San Francisco section.
You really were a front blazer.
She wasn't your typical
and anyway,
woman of the 70s.
The treasurer of the group had just gotten married, and I said, Jerry, I want to meet your bride. And he said, well, come on over. And her name was Linda, like mine. We sat down, and we're chatting about this and that. Then finally, we got into, well, what do you do? And I said, well, I'm an engineer. I work for Bechtel Power Corporation. Well, how would you like to come and work for the federal government? It turned out that she was in HR, human resources, or personnel, as they were calling it then. And I went in for an interview and got hired.
Wow.
So that started my career in working for the Navy.
So everything happened for a reason. So your career path kind of took...
I met her. If I hadn't been at that picnic on that particular day and met the other Linda, I don't know where I'd be.
Well, right.
What I find it in, you left Bechtel to go to the government. Wow.
Bechtel was suffering a big downturn due to the decline of the nuclear power industry.
Yeah.
Because nobody
was... Move.
Everybody
right.
was afraid of the word...
Nuclear.
Right.
Yeah. What about you, Ben?
They were the main builders of those.
Well,
things,
I was
right?
working in the power division, and
okay. That's,
I worked private industry till I was 30, and I was working for a small company, advertising direct mail company, and we had women who took letters home and filled in the name and address you know, mm-hmm. out of phone directory listings and mm-hmm. stuff. And she worked for the government full time. And she kept telling me, you need to come to work for the government. You need to come. I said, I don't want to work for the government. But
you came in kicking and screaming.
Yeah, I did.
And smiling.
And she talked me into coming down to Roslyn. She worked down in Roslyn for an interview. I went down for the interview and got the job, but I hadn't passed the government test.
Oh, the civil service
to
test.
To be rated, mm-hmm. you know, a GS, whatever.
Right.
So they said, go do it. And as soon as you get it, give your 2 weeks' notice. And that was all it took. I was gone, you know. But after a number of years of working in a word processing center, I realized that maybe I was smart enough, because by then I was like in my late 30s, that I could maybe go into computers.
Mm-hmm.
So I filled out some applications and got into an intern program.
Wow.
At 39 was...
Did you have to go back to school?
Well, it was very concentrated training. We had 6 months of in-house classroom training that would equal a year and a half at Nova. Mm-hmm. The courses were based on Nova's courses.
It's a Northern Virginia Community College.
Yeah. With the COBOL and Fortran and, you know.
COBOL.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. I was more than fortunate because I had gone on an interview and I hadn't heard anything back from them. And Teresa was living in London at the time, working over there, and we had made arrangements to bring our oldest niece and nephew over for a 3-week visit. And approaching.
That's when they
so
called.
So I called up the Hoffman people, and I said, you know, I really need an answer, because they said, we were just going to call you and offer you the job. I about keeled over. I was so nervous. I was shaking all over. And I said, okay, that's fine. But when does this program start? And they said, gave me a date. And I said, like right in the middle of my vacation, 3-week vacation. And they said, 80% of the people who come in late flunk out.
Uh-oh, so you better get here.
Yeah, so I said, well, isn't there somebody I could talk to? And they said, well, you can talk to the instructor. So I hoofed it over to Hoffman, talked to the instructor. He said, well, have you had any training? And I said, well, I took a night class in the Pentagon for computers. And they said, well, how did you do? And I said, well, I didn't have to take the final. I should tell you I did pretty well. And he said, well, who was your instructor? And I said, Mr. McDonald. And he said, he just looked at me. He said, you mean Captain McDonald? And I said, no, it's unusual to have the same name, but it was Mr. McDonald. Well, it turns out it was Captain McDonald from that very office who was going to be teaching the same class already taken.
Good. So you could still take your vacation.
Said, bye, have a nice vacation. Do you have your notes? Do you have your tests and all? I said, yeah, I keep all that stuff. It's really important stuff. I said, bye. Wow. Take the book with you and come back. We'll gone 3 weeks. I walk in the last day of the 3-week class, and they're taking their final exam. And I walked up to him. I said, do you want me to do this? And he said, go sit down. And that was my
So you were in IT the rest of your career then?
Yeah.
Yeah. When did you retire, Betty?
The beginning of 2004.
Uh-huh. And how about you, Linda? When did you retire?
The beginning of 2009.
Okay, so you both had a few years of retirement under your belt then.
And I've mm-hmm. loved every minute of it.
What do you like the best?
Not having to go to work.
Not having to get up when that alarm clock goes off.
When you work in IT, your life is not your own. You're on call, and it's in your job description, 24/7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if something shuts down, you got to be there.
You're there. You're as good as the post office.
How was the Y2K crisis?
Sleep, whatever.
Yeah, did you work through the Y2K crisis?
Absolutely.
Was that round the clock?
Yes. Yes, it was.
You know what I hear from retirees, and it covers the waterfront, is what they miss, what they like, what they don't like. But almost everybody cites rush hour. is something that they do, really do not miss. I mean, it's a, they didn't know until they stopped doing it what a stressful thing it was getting to and from work during the day. They a lot of them think this retiring when they did was going to add years to their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my good friend Georgia, she said the best thing about retirement is not having to put a lid on her coffee cup. She can mm-hmm. sit down in the morning yeah. at her kitchen table and drink it without a lid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she was normally running out the door and getting in the car and commuting.
It's yeah. nice listening to the traffic reports and not mm-hmm. being a traffic
right. That's right.
I remember that road. I remember that bottleneck. Yeah.
Because I was still working when they built the flyover mm-hmm. coming off of 495 to head 95 south. So that was interesting watching that.
And not having to
built.
Be in the middle of it.
But I could never go on it. I've only been on it one time. It freaks me out.
For those of you listening,
you can't see anything.
The flyovers, picture a California highway, and they have these roads that go over top the other roads. And
yeah, it's
they
like
have
a
one,
big network
they
of
They have
roads.
One here. It's the only one on the Beltway, I believe. And it goes way up there.
Yes, it does.
It's yeah. part of the Capitol Beltway.
And there's no way to get off if there's a wreck. So.
Oy. But it doesn't blow in the wind like the bridge.
Well, there
does.
Is a way to get
it's
off if there's
ice
a wreck.
Is over, yeah. though. Yeah. So.
The hard way.
I'm a finance type, and I'm not asking any personal questions, but with regards to finances, did you have, or did any of your compatriots have, something that they encountered that was both good and bad? You know, you save for retirement, you earn your annuity, and you put money in the thrift, or you don't put money in the thrift. But were there any surprises when you did your planning that you didn't include, or that you did include you didn't need, so it was a pleasant surprise? And this could be not you, because it's too piercing mm-hmm. just to talk to you all.
Or but did you plan for financial, like, did you just retire and hope for the best, or did you do any financial planning leading up to retirement?
I planned for it. Mm-hmm. It took me a while to wise up about my money. Because the more I made, the more I spent.
Hey.
And
me. Gee.
You're an American.
That's a typical.
I finally realized that I could not keep doing that. And so I got my credit cards and paid off. And then I started saving money. And it was quite a number of years. But I planned very carefully for retirement, saving in the thrift savings program, and I had another account outside of the government. But I went to a financial planner, mm-hmm. thanks to my sister, who was using the same company, and they're very personably oriented.
So they're easy to talk to.
They're easy to talk to. Mm-hmm. They're very good at guiding you with the right information that you need. So, and I still use them now that I'm retired.
Yeah, it's good to reach out for help, because just like when you're painting a room, if you're not a good painter, it could turn out looking pretty bad. So same thing with your money.
So that was very important to me.
It's so interesting you'd say it that way, because a friend of a friend was a photographer in California, and she was making $600,000 a year.
Wow.
Good photographer, I might add. She lost her house because while she was making $600,000, she was spending $750,000.
Wow.
And, you know, this is something it seems so basic and so logical, right. But live beneath your means.
Especially when you're nearing retirement.
Yeah.
Try to get used to living on the income and know what the income's going to be that you're going to have when you retire. So many people don't even know how much they'll have coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was one thing that I did. I knew how had made sure that I, through the government, knew how much my annuity was going to be
mm-hmm.
and figured up all my expenses and talked to the financial planner I was using, and we determined that I had enough money to retire on.
Good. That was a conscious decision.
Absolutely, yes.
It isn't always that way
and
for some people.
I was ready to go.
Yeah. And luckily, no health problem, because a lot of people are forced into retirement early because mm-hmm. their health goes downhill or their spouse's health goes downhill, and that can make you make decisions that you weren't planning on. So it's good you had the time to plan.
I know Bob's heard this a jillion times, but the old rule of thumb used to be make sure your last check, the last check that you write, bounces. You know, ha, ha, ha. The problem is, when is that going to be?
Right.
And tell me when you're going to die, and then I can advise you.
Then so, you can figure out how long it has to last.
You know, given the way pensions are going in the private sector, which is away, disappearing, people who work for the federal government, particularly make a career of it and do get up in the higher grades, ought to be about the richest people in their development or nursing home or assisted care center because of that system. But you do need to plan.
You still have to plan. Mm-hmm. And what about you, Linda? Anything on the financial planning end of it that you did differently or that you took advantage of?
I took I signed up for the long-term healthcare program, which is
brilliant.
Very kind of pricey.
Mm-hmm.
And since they had no competitors, the particular company, Long Term Care Partners LLC, they had a competitor, and shortly after the competitor dropped out of sight, they raised the price 25%.
Oh, that had nothing to do with no competitors, though.
Yeah.
That had to do with the fact
the
that
costs.
the costs were going up.
I'll tell you something, and I know this for a fact. Yeah. I bought long-term care insurance a long time ago. I mean, way before I needed the there's a cutoff age, but I bought it a long time ago from the company. The company continues to cover me, and it's a good policy, but they haven't written a new policy in 15 years. And at one point, and I'm making these numbers up, but at one point there were, say, 112 companies in the U.S. that provided long-term care insurance. Now there's six.
Oh,
and the reason is it's so expensive to them.
To administer.
So, you know, this is not an ad for long-term care partners.
No. But the federal plan raised their rates 25%. The private sector rates went up 150%.
Okay,
I've known
sure.
people who had their premiums double and triple.
And like I happen to be in a particular group. It's called Washington Post Retirees. So I'm in a group plan. But they can raise it.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
If they raise it for the group and the insurance commissioner permits it. But no, it's turned out to be my mother, as I frequently say, my mother worked for the government, and she got long-term care insurance and healthy all her life, no few vices. She didn't own a car until she was in her mid-30s, you know, city kid. But in her final years, she had to go into assisted living. And because of the long-term care insurance, the federal employee health benefits program, and Medicare, I, as her son and my kids, her grandchildren, we were out almost nothing financially because of that.
They took care of her.
And that was, I always say this, the long-term care insurance is a gift to your loved ones.
That's right.
As much as to yourself.
Because number one caregiver is your family.
Exactly.
And they're the ones who have to bear the burden of your care if you should need it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I always say long-term care insurance does two things. It protects your assets, which is why most people buy it. But also protects your family, because they're the ones who are going to be stressed through the burden.
Well,
of
and it's like a stand-up comedy routine too. You know, you have people who say, "What if I don't use it?" And you think, "You've won the lottery."
Yeah, that's
if
right.
that money
don't
is
complain.
Wasted, if every penny that you put into insurance premium, it's like fire insurance. What if you don't use it?
Yeah. What if your house doesn't burn down?
Yeah.
It's a catch 22.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's like any insurance. You have to think of it as insurance.
Okay, that was a great answer, and that reaches back a little bit pre-retirement, all the way back to mid-career, from what I'm hearing. That,
right.
If you do it early enough, I waited not too long, but right on the cusp.
Yeah.
After listening to Tammy and Mike and the long-term care partners, when they come in, I go, maybe I should do this, but I'm not a Fed, so
can't get in the federal plan.
If you can find a company, then that's the trick.
That was hard. Yeah.
Yeah. It amazed me that this huge number. Everybody thought it was going to be the wave of the future, but it is. But it is so expensive, and people are going into these facilities and staying 10, 12 years, and that's.
It's hard on the insurance company to try to make it reasonably affordable, yet still make a profit, because insurance companies aren't there for volunteer. You know, got to make money.
I'll tell you a funny, awful story. When I applied for it, I think I was 64 or 5, and they made me take a mental test.
He was dry.
And I flunked it. Now.
Well, he was preoccupied.
I was driving on the Beltway, and I said, "Do you mind if I take it on the Beltway? How hard could this be?" It wasn't hard in the sense that you needed a formula, but this is the
you
way
had to
one
focus.
Of the questions. Name six fruits. Okay, I name six fruits. I ask you a bunch of other questions, and they come back and say, "Take each one of the six fruits and put it in a sentence." Now we're four questions beyond it.
Yeah.
So I said, "Okay, the next time I take it." Apple, blueberry, you know, and I did it by the ABC, so if they ever asked me again, I could do it. Anyway, so, but I took it in the office, shut everything off, phones off, and it was okay.
But you passed.
Yeah.
You don't
That's
have dementia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw a British sitcom the other day on PBS, and they were asking, they thought this elderly woman had dementia, and her son was trying to get her committed. And again, it's British, and they said, when did World War II start? Well, if you're a Brit, that's September 1939. I mean, they just, like we do, December 7th, 1941, for them, September 39. And she said, August 1919, and everybody looked at her funny, and she said, that's when the Versailles Treaty was signed, forcing Germany to do this and that. So it set the stage so for her. She was smarter than the average. Yeah.
She took it a step further.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a big history buff, right, Linda? You enjoy history?
I do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we were having a conversation on the way in this morning about the history of Washington, D.C., and how interesting it is. We all feel fortunate to live and work in a city like this.
Yeah, it was down there Saturday night. They had a what's that motor, the thing with the wheels, Segway? Or
Segway. The Segway tours. Mm-hmm.
And they were in the middle of Constitution Avenue. They're brave. Anyway, but that, you know, that beats the heck out of walking in Washington.
Yeah, those are fun tours. I did one of Annapolis. I didn't do the D.C.
I had a friend
one.
Who was born and raised in D.C., and he took a job in Cincinnati. He was in his 30s, and he thought, you know, I grew up here, but I'm going to take a bus tour. Mm-hmm. And he took one of these tours. He said they lied like dogs. He said, in this house, there's a parrot that's 312 years old. And
nobody
General Grant's mother is there. And he said, no truth to it. But, fun trip.
It made
fun
it
trip.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Be careful who you listen to.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we got another question here. Did it take long after retirement? I think you discussed this, to decouple from the workday.
Absolutely not.
So no trouble scheduling
your time?
You
didn't have any trouble with that one, did you?
No.
Did you have to, like when you left federal service, did you already kind of know what your day was going to look like? Did you kind of have an idea of the things you wanted to do after you retired?
No, I didn't. It was my goal was just to meet the requirements to be able to retire because I was so ready to retire. Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought anything beyond that. I was just looking forward to
de-stressing.
I'm a big reader, and I had stacks of books. I still have stacks of books that I was going to read. And one of the stacks was Nora Roberts. She writes a futuristic crime story with J.D. Robb, with a female police lieutenant in New York City. And I started reading them. She writes to a year, and I started reading them, and I can't keep up because I'm reading other things as well. So I said, when I retire, that's what I'm going to read. And I had 17 of them stored up to read, and I read each one right in a row.
In order, huh?
In order, yes. I had the best time.
That was a good feeling.
Okay, so you had no trouble.
No trouble.
You've enjoyed it. Have you either of you done any traveling in retirement? That's not a big thing for you?
A little
you.
Bit. Yeah. Teresa and I have been to Disney World, and which we really liked. And we've been to England. We have friends there.
Mm-hmm.
And
a lot of people talk about traveling as one of the things that enjoy in retirement. So,
yeah.
Well, I had a little trouble at first. When I was 21 years old and working one of my first jobs, I made friends with an older gentleman who was ready to retire. And I said to him, well, what made you decide to retire? Because I'm 21. Who can imagine, you know, half
career.
A century into the future? He said, well, you know what, Linda? I woke up one morning and I said, I've had it. It's time to retire. And I couldn't ever forget that. So one day in December of 2008, I woke up, no, it was actually November. November 2008, I woke up and, you know, I've had it with this place. I'm not trying to say anything negative, but there were some things going on that I did not approve of. And I thought, I have got my degree now. I can go out and do a lot of other things. So I just put in for my retirement quick, just like that.
You
got
just
out,
knew.
And then, but for the first month or so, I was having a little withdrawal. I was used to slugging in the morning and taking the PRTC bus back. in the evening, and I could read on the bus, read the paper in the morning, or
so you had your routine.
Read the books in the evening. Mm-hmm. So I kind of missed that.
But you could do that on your own sofa.
No, I know, but then you get a little bit more exercise.
Right.
Plus, yeah. I miss, you know, the friends in the going out to lunch.
Did you meet your friends after you retired? Did you still keep in touch after retirement?
With some people.
Yeah.
But
if you could see her face. No.
Well, there were some strange thing goings on, and like I said, and I woke up that one morning, and I said, you know, just like that old gentleman told me, you wake up one morning and you say, this is it.
I'm ready to go. You know it.
You know, it's so interesting you say that because I have, there's probably, I get a lot of emails. Thank God I get a lot of emails from people. And there's probably 50, 60 names now that I just recognize. We've been corresponding back and forth for years in mm-hmm. some cases. I love hearing from them. A lot of them do guest columns for me. But this last week I got two emails, one from a guy in central Michigan, one from a guy in San Diego, and they both hit retirement eligibility, not retirement age necessarily, but they can retire. And they said it was like almost like a religious experience. They crossed over, you know, and now they know they could go in any day and say, I'm out of here.
Enough.
And do the proverbial whatever you do to the boss's desk. But right. They said there was this feeling of freedom.
Yeah, make sure you don't do that before you're
exactly.
eligible.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Check with
person. Check to make sure that you're eligible.
But measure twice, cut once.
Yeah, I had a lady one time who came in with her papers. She must have woke up one day and said, I'm eligible. You know, I'm ready to go. And she was giving me 30 days notice. I was the retirement specialist at the time. And so I said, okay, she was 61 and she had her 20-year PIN and you can retire at 60 with 20 years. So I went, the first thing you do when you process a retirement is you go through the personnel folder to make sure they have 20 years. Well, when we hired her intermittent appointment. It wasn't full time. It wasn't part time. Mm-hmm. She just worked when they needed her and she was in school. So it wasn't full time. So I added up 18 months over 3 years of creditable service and then another 17 years of full time, which only added up to 18 and a half years. And she didn't have 20 years. So unfortunately for her, I had to give her application back and tell her she had to work till she turned 62.
She didn't cross the Rubicon.
No, she
brief.
Wasn't happy either.
We have a prolific emailer from the West Coast, and he sent something
show,
in
yeah.
late last night, early this morning, I forget. And he asked me to ask you this, and he said, what piece of advice would you give to somebody at the beginning stage of their career with some of the noise that they hear they're going to do to feds and somebody mid-career? What would you say? I mean, when you first went, you know, you went into this federal government, I won't say morass, but it was a pretty big place. And, you know, you followed a glide path that both got you to where you wanted to. But I'm sure there was some distractions along the way or some rumors that they're going to turn the, I think they probably did this back when you were there. They're going to turn the high three into the high five, right? And they're going to do this or that. Do you just, you know, put your ear muffs on and go, I'm going forward, and you all can stay in the ditch if you want.
Well, when I was working for the Navy at this engineering field division, the rumor mill had it that they were going to shut it down and that they were going to move to San Diego. But that wasn't going to happen for quite a few years, but at least according to the commanding officer. But I knew that the clock was ticking and it would be time for me to start looking on what I could do to move out of here into a better job. Mm-hmm. So that spurred me on to start competing for other positions elsewhere.
But within the government.
Yeah. The government, yes. Mm.
So the bottom line there, she didn't sit and grouse and complain about it. She took action and found a way to improve her own situation, which I think is where we end up sometimes. We just get so disgruntled because things aren't going the way we want them to go. Well, it's up to you to change it sometimes.
You have to find your own path
mm-hmm. yeah.
out of course, whatever doesn't sit well with you. I got hired during a RIF. Now, if that isn't nerve-wracking, I don't know
what
is.
That's how good you were.
Yeah. I guess so. They hung on to me for
They're getting rid of everybody else, and they're bringing you on board.
And the company that I had worked for, the woman kept saying, you're not going to make that much money. And I kept saying, I'm going to make more than I'm making here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I have benefits. Right. And she said, but you're being hired during a RIF. I said, I understand that, but I have to do this.
Yeah, and there's always a need, because at the time you were in the clerk typist position, which was always needed, even during a RIF. So you knew you had some job security with
that position. Hopefully I did.
Right. Which we no longer have typing pools. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Yeah, I don't think there is a GS-1 left in the government.
No.
Maybe not very many twos, if any.
No, that's maybe a good thing. Computers have taken over.
Talking about twos, we're less than 2 minutes to go.
Wow,
how about
fast.
That for a segue? Now, Andrew says you got 1 minute. Tammy?
Well, since we're here talking about NARF today, I think that everyone should visit NARF.org, NARFE.org, and learn about this organization.
Okay, ladies in unison.
Is everybody in the room here a NARF member?
Yes.
I think so.
Okay, there we go.
NARF works for active and the retired annuitants. It's very important organization.
The organization is very structured in some respects, at least at the Washington headquarters level. And they are constantly looking at new initiatives that they need to tackle, such as membership.
Okay. Mike?
All right, Nald, I think that's a good last word. You don't have to be, and you shouldn't wait until you're retired to join an outfit like NARF. Join it if you're 26 years old.
All righty. Thanks all for being here. We'll be back next week, but we don't have a guest yet, but we will before next week, but it'll be up on the website. Thanks for listening, and bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.